Good afternoon. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Sarah LaDuc. It is gardening today, and we welcome back Bob Graves, co-owner of Fadigan's Nursery in Latham, New York, Fred Breglia, director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York, and Dale Isla Riggs, the owner and operator of the Berry Patch, a first-generation diversified farm in Steventown, New York. The number to call with your gardening questions is 800-348-2551. That's 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Hi, everybody. Welcome Hello. To the show. Thank you for being here.
Again. Glad to be here.
Dale Isla, I want to start with you because you've brought in a glorious spread of tomatoes. It is tomato time.
It is big time tomato time. Tomatoes are super early this year. They're pouring in right now, and it is the time for people to enjoy one of summer's greatest joys.
Any other summer joys we should mention before we go to the calls?
It's not 90 degrees.
Yeah, that's true.
It's very nice out there.
And the dew point is less than 70,
yes.
So it's even nicer.
When you work outside all the time, you really appreciate that.
You do.
Sure.
For sure.
800-323-9262. 1-800. Nope, that's the wrong phone number. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. That's what happens if I don't look at it and just go off memory. I won't do that again. 1-800-348-2551. Are you guys ready to take some calls?
Let's do it.
Let's get right to it. Okay. We'll go to Roberta in Troy. Hello, Roberta.
Hello. Thank you very much for taking my call. I called the Arboretum, and very kindly Susan said that you were going to be on the radio today and that maybe you would be able to help me.
Oh, perfect.
I have a very old, very large maple that now has carpenter ants in it, and I'm all for preservation of trees. I do not want to take this tree down. I have called people who see their tree experts, and they say, just cut it down. We don't do extermination. I have called people who say they are arborists, and they say, no, we don't do that. Just cut it down. I am hoping you can find me an arborist. I am in Troy, but the great surrounding area. Do you know any arborists who treat maple trees?
Yeah, so first off, can you send me an email, and then I can connect you with that. So I'm going to give you my email real quick, Fred@LandisArboretum, LandisArboretum.org. And just state the question in the email and I'll connect the dots. I do have a couple of quick questions for you, though. In regards to the tree, is it close to the house or is it away from the house?
It's the city's tree. It's on the green strip, but they expect us to take care of them, and of course they will.
Okay.
But it's right on, it's between, I live on Oakwood Avenue.
Okay.
It's a pretty fast moving.
Okay.
It's actually Route 40.
Yep.
So, if you want to save it.
So typically, you know, maples have some interior rot when they get older. That's not a bad thing. That's just normal. And the carpenter ants, you know, are just sort of a symptom or a sign that says, hey, you do have some interior decay, which, again, I don't think I've ever met an old maple that didn't have some old decay. So that's kind of normal. But there are things that arborists can do to help keep trees up, including cabling, bracing, and even some reductions. And nowadays, we're recommending reductions a lot, especially in areas where, you know, the tree potentially could fall. So when we say reductions, what we're thinking about is these trees are like big levers and there's biomechanics going on. So if you shorten levers, you know, a lot of times with some cabling, you very well could keep trees standing for a much longer period of time. But this is a case where you would definitely want to get a ISA certified arborist. So if you send me an email to that fred@landisarboretum.org email, I'll connect the dots for you right away.
.org. What did you say? And then after, did you say email?
That's my email. Yeah, so just shoot me an email that says, you know, who you are and
Fred
what you're...
FredLandisArboretum.org?
Yep, FredLandisArboretum.org.
Thank you.
You got it, and I'll connect the dots.
Thank you, Roberta. Have a great day.
Take care now. Thanks for reaching out.
1-800-348-2551. The phone number To pose your gardening questions is 1-800-348-2551. We will keep it rolling and go to Laura in Catskill. Hello, Laura.
Oh, hello. I'm calling about a large horse chestnut with twin trunks. Last fall, it was struck by lightning, and the lightning went all around the trunks and went to the ground, of course.
Yep.
In the spring, the leaves came back, but the leaves on one side of the tree, remember it as twin trunks, they all died. The leaves on the other side are flourishing on some branches, and I'm hoping to save this tree. How would you suggest I proceed?
Yep, so it's another case where, so what happens with lightning with tree strikes, generally they will twirl around, like you say, kind of the trunk. They sort of spiral around, and then they want to ground themselves out, so they ground themselves out into the root systems. And I've seen a lot of trees struck by lightning over the years, and I will say that a good number of those trees have survived the injury. I've also seen some trees that just don't make it. And it really depends on how much of a charge they got into that root system and how much damage, we're talking about death or loss of roots, did it actually suffer. And if it happened last year, you generally don't know exactly how bad it's going to be for a year, 2 years, sometimes even 3 years. But the fact that half of the tree is alive is good. The other half, you said it leafed out kind of good, which is normal because it has stored energy. It leafed out from the stored energy. Did they shrivel right up like right after that, or are they still there and just have more like browning on them?
They have browning. They are still there, and they took perhaps 5 or 6 weeks to turn brown.
Okay, because there is a chance it's related to a disease, not lightning. Horse chestnuts are really, really famous for getting what we call leaf blotch, and it's not a fatal disease. In fact, you know, this time of year, I'm seeing it show up quite a bit because of the way the environmental conditions have been playing out. It's kind of looking like a good year for it. So I would say that with that, you would definitely want to get a certified arborist to come in and consult on that. And that sort of like the last caller, if you wanted to just give me an email, I can connect the dots. Give me your address in there too, so I know where it is. And I can find an arborist and a recommendation for you to try to get that looked at.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you don't just want a normal tree company. You really want to try to get a certified arborist, because we're the ones that are trying to, you know, keep these trees up. And I'm not saying another tree company wouldn't, but they may not have enough training or knowledge to be able to back that up. So
in a situation like that, Fred, is it just the root damage, or have we got a lot of vascular damage to the cambium too? I mean, it could have basically boiled that plumbing, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, the root damage is part of it, and then the other part is just what Bob said. There's a lot of vascular tissue damage, so it's all the plumbing of these trees, the veins and arteries, kind of like us, only xylem, phloem, cambium in trees. And when that lightning bolt tore through, everything around that bolt is definitely pretty gone. But the tree still has more vascular tissue on the other side. So just how severe was it? You're not going to always know that right away. But I will say that, you know, there has been trees, Atlantis, that got struck with lightning. And, you know, they weren't in an area where anything, you know, no danger of falling or anything like that. And I said, you know, we're not going to cut them down. We're leaving them. And I watched it for about 2-3 years, and they came back, and they have really good vigor, and you could still see the old scar. And, you know, it's really uncommon to go into an old-growth forest ecosystem and not find trees that have lightning strikes that are totally alive. So there's hope, but a certified arborist is going to be, you know, help you, you know how to proceed. And there are things we can do to help the tree. We can add supplemental water, sometimes some fertilization, could be a cable. Things like that could help. So shoot me an email, fred@landisarboretum.org, and I'll help connect the dots.
Thank you. That's very encouraging.
Yep. You're welcome.
Thank you for your call, Laura. Have a wonderful day. 800-348-2551 or voxpop@wamc.org. We have a lot of emails, so let's run through some emails before we take our first break of the show. This is from Carrie. She says, I put in 2 rows of strawberry plants last year, so this was my first harvest. I bought 2 varieties, 1 June-bearing and 1 Ever-bearing. I don't remember their exact names. They both produced a great crop. The problem is that the supposed ever-bearing plants stopped producing about the same time as the June-bearing plants. The plants are healthy, but there's no flowers or berries. Do you think I got the wrong type? I cut back my June-bearing plants after they stopped producing, and I now cut the other ones back as well? I tried fertilizing, but that didn't seem to work.
I would leave the ones on the everbearing plant because everbearers do not produce flowers very well when it's hot. Mm. And with all this hot weather, and especially hot nights, that may be impacting it. They're not true everbearing. They kind of go in cycles. They'll usually have about 3 fruiting cycles per year. And also during the long days of June, they will put out runners instead. So they're putting their energy into the runners then. And once they stop runnering is when they'll start to produce flowers again.
And it is true, isn't it, that when you get really hot weather, plants in general just sort of shut down.
Yes.
They just don't grow much when it gets really hot.
Yeah. And especially strawberries and raspberries are really cool season crops. Mm. So they do not like the hot weather at all.
Right.
And should they let them run when they're running? Or should they trim them back to put more power into fruit?
It's always nice to let some of the runner plants root. It allows the planting to keep going and get a little bit larger. If they're runnering excessively, it's good to cut off some of the extra runners. I usually like to let about 5 of them root and then cut off the extras.
Because that's really how you propagate strawberries.
That's what I was going to say.
The mother plants don't last forever.
Right. Yep. Right. Exactly. Yep.
And you plant those runners, a lot of times they'll spread you can get more plants, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
For sure.
This is from Nyamia. It says, "Hi, my yucca plant has sprouted 2 healthy offshoots. I'd like to transplant them somewhere else. When is the optimal time to do this?"
Not now. Generally speaking, with things like that, you want to do them when they're maybe still in a period of growth, but not their most active period of growth, and not when it's hottest. So in trying to propagate anything in that way, usually late summer, early fall is okay, or early spring. The hard part about the spring is sometimes things happen really quick and you just don't get to it. You have a little more time in the fall to do it. So I wouldn't wait till November. I mean, I think
September, October.
I'd be looking more September, October.
Yeah. And when she does that, do you sort of use a pruner and go underground and kind of cut that?
Try to cut down that shoot off with some roots. They're really tough plants.
Yeah, they are tough plants.
They are tough. They're hardy.
Good for them.
Yep.
1-800-348-2551. It is Gardening Today on Vox Pop, and we will be right back after this. Welcome back to Vox Pop. I'm Sarah LeDuc in for Ray Graff. It is Gardening Today. Bob Graves of Fatigan's Nursery, Fred Breglia of the Landis Arboretum, and Dale Isla Riggs of the Berry Patch are all here to answer your gardening questions. 800-348-2551 is the phone number. And let us go to Miriam in Cheshire. Hello, Miriam.
Hi. Thank you so much.
You got it.
Great. I'm calling because I have a 3-year-old ornamental dwarf weeping cherry tree in my yard. It had nice pink flowers in the spring. It's done well. But now there are these 3 huge shoots coming out the top, going straight up into the air. They're as tall as the tree itself.
Yep.
The leaves are identical to the leaves on the weeping branches. Should I cut them off now, wait till it's dormant, or will they topple over and weep like the other branches? I'm just not sure what to do.
No, you want to cut them off.
Take them off.
I see Bob over here nodding as well. We both would say you want to take them off, and you want to take them off. You could take them off now. I wouldn't wait. No, this is actually a good time to prune them off. And when you do prune them off, prune them back to the point of origin. So don't cut and leave a stub. Find out where those uprights are growing from. And you want to make sure you're cutting it right back to that point. And if you're not sure how to make a pruning cut or proper pruning cut, there's a great website that's free. It's research-based by the International Society of Arboriculture, treesaregood.org. And it'll give you diagrams of how to make the pruning cuts. A whole bunch of other stuff, too. Mulching, pruning, planting, plant healthcare.
A lot of things that are grafted like that do odd things. They just kind of revert or want to go back to the way they were. Depends on how the grafting was done. So it's almost typical.
Yeah, it's actually quite common. And you, as the tree gets older, you might see a lot less of that. It becomes bigger and more vigorous. But keep an eye out, because if you actually let it go, it would overtake eventually the weeping portion.
Becomes not a weeper.
And that would be bad.
Okay.
That would
depend on your point of view.
But it would definitely make it stop weeping.
Yeah, right.
All right.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you so much.
You got it. Good luck.
It's a little bit thrilling when there is a succinct answer, right? Yeah.
It is.
Just cut them off. Okay, here we go.
There are things we know and things we don't know. Sometimes that's one we know.
Sometimes it's simple. Yep.
Fantastic. Let's keep going. We'll go to Peter in Gilderland. Hello, Peter.
Yes, hello. Just wondering about herbs. I have different herbs in a raised bed and some leaf lettuce, parsley, sorrel, and basil. Is there one general way on how to keep trimming those things so you get continued herbs or continued lettuce and herbs? Or are they all a little different on how to harvest them?
They're all a little bit different. The other thing is that they're all pretty much all cool season crops. Basil is a warm season crop, but it will start to go to flower if you let it get too large. So the important thing is to keep trimming. Parsley will eventually go to seed, but that's not usually till the next year. So if you keep your parsley well watered and well fertilized and well trimmed, that should produce for you all year. I always tell people with the basil to always harvest from the top of the plant and make sure that you leave at least one set of leaves below where you're trimming, so those put out side shoots and will keep producing for you. Otherwise, they'll produce flowers at the top, and then the basil gets a little more bitter in taste.
It does.
It's
it
still
really
good,
does.
But,
yeah.
Yeah. But it does get
taste
bitter.
Taste change goes down fast, though, once it goes to flower.
Yeah, and then lettuce is certainly a cool season crop, and in this hot weather, the lettuce is going to go to flower unless you just keep cutting it back, and even then, it will eventually send up a flower stalk from the middle.
Best bet, plant some more lettuce.
That's right.
Soon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Harvest it and plant more.
That's what most growers do, is we do multiple plantings over the season. So get some lettuce seeds started now to plant out in transplants in about a month or so, and then you'll have a nice lettuce harvest in the fall.
Okay. Well, thanks. So generally just cut the from the top to get rid of any budding and flowers, and then harvest also from the top, or with lettuce, harvest maybe from the base too, or no?
So the lettuce, I'm a big fan of you just cut the whole head and enjoy the whole head of lettuce. If it's leaf lettuce, you can cut small sections at a time. But I'm a big fan of just harvest the head, because in this hot weather in the middle of the summer, it wants to produce a flower.
Yeah, it's going to launch quick.
It will, yeah. And even if it's a little younger with lettuce, the beauty of lettuce is, you know, I love young lettuce. It tastes just as good as the older lettuce, if not better. So, you know, you might lose a little bit of yield, but you get it back in taste.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Peter. 800-348-2551. Keep it rolling and go to Cindy in Westerlo. Hello, Cindy.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, indeed.
Hello?
Yes, we're here.
Okay. I'm looking for a recommendation for what to plant next to a man-made pond. We built it in the middle of a very sunny area. The trees are pretty far away from it, and that seemed like a great idea at the time. But we get an awful lot of algae, and it also gets a little too warm for the koi that are in it. So we're looking for something we can plant near it that won't, where the roots won't interfere with the liner. I'm a little worried about the roots growing in and bothering the liner. There's like a felt pad and then a rubber liner. It's 4 feet deep.
How wide is this pond? How big? Just to give us a dimension.
It's 18 by 28. And there's only one area where I could plant anything, which is on the west end. The west end is like 18 feet wide.
What minimizes your algae in a pond like that is surface growth. You need plants with leaves on the surface of the pond to cut down on the amount of light that gets in there. And one of the easiest ways to do that is with floaters. Water lettuce.
Well, the koi have been eating anything that floats, although the water lettuce has helped a little bit.
Water lettuce and water hyacinths are the way to go. For that, you know, planting things.
Water hyacinths absolutely did not. They didn't want to live. I don't understand why, but the water hyacinths turn brown and they don't. They don't thrive in there.
Boy, they're usually like
a weed. The water lettuce has been doing better.
They'll normally take right over in that situation. Is it, you know, planting
things
when
it was cooler.
Planting things along the edge isn't going to provide the shade that's going to cut down on your algae. You can plant things along the edge and put some bog plants in there if you wanted to.
There's a bunch of shrubs that would work, but still none of that would.
That's not going to take care of your surface light problem.
No, that would be more like a bigger tree that you would
need. I suppose you could do,
which
too.
I suppose you could do, but I tend to think it's probably...
I'd be okay with planting... I'd be okay with planting a tree, like a 20-foot tree or something, but I'm worried about the roots interfering with the pond liner.
Yeah, well, anything's going to have roots that are going to spread.
Yeah, and they're going to want to go. Roots are opportunistic, so if there's water and air, that's what they they're looking for. So, you know, and typically just the physiology of trees, woody plants in general, is that the root system will spread out, could spread up three times the canopy spread. So your fibrous root systems are, they're like big pancakes, and, you know, they're not real deep except for those anchoring roots, but those other roots will migrate. And if you have a liner there, you know, I'm a little bit more hesitant. I mean, we have big trees around ponds at the Arboretum, and, you know, they've been, you know, no problem, but none of those ponds have any kind of liner in them.
This is an artificial
pond. Right, this is like a more of a display pond, it sounds like. There are
ways you can treat the water too. I mean, there are colors that you can put in the water. Some of these things you need to get a permit for.
But there
are ways to control the algae without using plants.
Which you almost might have to if that's the main reason, because I don't think, you know, like Bob said, the problem is it's 4 feet. If it was deeper, it would have a change of course. It would be you would have these weeds around the edges, but then the center, it would have a harder time dealing with it.
And people sometimes think putting a pump or a fountain and it's going to solve the problem. It's not.
That's what I was going to say. Maybe
it helps, but it doesn't solve the algae problem. You think water flowing will do it, but it's the sunlight reaching the surface that's causing your problem.
Right, and it being shallow is really conducive to that.
It's warm
because it's so warm.
One of the things that was recommended by the people who built it was to put lots of water lilies and other plants in the rock shelves around the outside perimeter, which they did initially, but they planted them directly on the rock shelf with not a pot or anything, and the ones that they planted don't thrive at all.
Okay.
So I ended up buying some and putting them in a bigger pot, and then putting the pot on the plant shelf. The ones I did that with, they seem to live better, but I don't really have space enough to do enough of them to provide significant shade.
Yep. So I guess, you know, just the only – at the Arboretum, we only have one pond that would fit your sort of similar to what you're saying. It's smaller than what you're saying, but it is about as deep as yours, about 4 or 5, maybe, I don't even think it's 5 foot deep. And it's a man-made pond. We put it in an area where we have our meditation garden, if anyone's been out to Landis that's listening, or yourself. And it was an area that we weren't using at the Arboretum. It was mostly all invasive species. And we had a donor come to us and said, would you guys be interested in a meditation garden? She wanted this pond, and we built this labyrinth. It's a really cool area. It became an absolute hub. I love the fact that we turned an invasive area, you know, plants with nothing but invasives with shallow bedrock into an absolute meeting space and hub for Landis, and it really has done that. So in this, in the middle of this is this pond, and what we did was plant water lilies in there, and we didn't plant them in a container. We actually tied them, the roots to rocks and with string and tossed them out. And it doesn't have a rubber liner. It has a clay liner, so it's able to get in. It does have a liner, though. And I'll tell you what, it went from various types of weeds on the surface to pretty much nothing but water lilies. It's absolutely gorgeous. But there's, I don't think, any plants that can outcompete those water lilies. When they get growing, and now we have a new pond that we built, rebuilt, I should say. And one of the first things we did was I got a canoe. And we went out there with a bunch of water lilies with the rocks, tied them to rocks, and strategically dropped them out in the middle of this thing. And they're just starting to come up now, but I would imagine that they'd probably be, you know, quite a bit of them. And if you can shade them,
you got to get some plant material on the surface to shade it to cut that down. I wouldn't give up on the water hyacinths either, because usually they take off. Yeah, I wouldn't give up on that.
What are you tying them to the rocks with that wouldn't eventually rot or wouldn't, you know, be some sort of
It's temporary. It's once they root in,
you don't have to worry about them.
It's just if you put the root in without the rock being tied to them, we just use like some string, and it's not going to last real long. It might last a year. But,
you can even pot them in a pot, cut some holes in the bottom and drop it in.
You could do that,
and
too.
And it'll root right through the bottom of the pot.
That's another way to do it, too. Yep. And another pond, Ed Miller started the Native Plant Trail. He he just got rocks with water lilies and tossed them out there, and they took right off. So, you know, those are, and the water hyacinth is another option. I think those are both valid. I think that you could get them growing, and they probably would work. But all you're doing with that rock is just anchoring it down so it touches the ground long enough. That if you have a rubber liner, I'm not sure how that would
maybe
work.
Maybe you want to put it in a pot if you got the liner.
Then you might have to put it in a pot, like Bob said.
Okay.
Thank you, Cindy.
Okay.
Have a great afternoon.
Right.
Good
Thank
luck.
Thank you very much.
Of course.
Yeah, good luck.
It sounds like a pretty satisfying way of planting something, just throwing it into a pond.
You know, I have never seen it until Ed Miller showed me this. This guy was a legend, and he was planting acorns. He was in his 90s planting acorns for the future. So he really forward-thinking
very
guy.
Very optimistic.
Very optimistic guy. But he showed me, he's like, oh, Fred, I mean, like, I could do, oh, you don't need to do that. Just tie a string and throw them out. And when I saw the results, it proved itself. And then the board president also did something similar.
Cool.
So it works, and we really have a lot of water lilies. People are like blown away by these water lilies.
800-348-2551. It is Gardening on Vox Pop. I'm Sarah LeDuc here with Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, and Delilah Riggs. Let's go now to Mike in Knox. Hello, Mike.
Hi. So I have a question regarding beans and peas and basically their germination this year. I've planted I grow yellow wax beans and sugar snap peas and some regular shelling peas. This year, for the first year, virtually none of them came up. I've planted them each three times. I planted them in different locations of the garden. The very last time I planted a pound of seed for the beans, and I don't even know if a quarter came up. The one thing I did notice is when this last planting came up of the beans, needed the white seed coat. Some of the white seed coats did look rusty, but that was after the plants were up and you could still see the seed coat. So I'm just wondering if there's anything I should be testing for. I've had no other plant and no other problems with any of my other plants that I planted by seed, just those two in the legume family.
So my suggestion is, do you have any of the seed left that you planted?
I do for the peas.
So anytime you seem to have a germination issue before you make another planting, actually just set up your own little germination test and take a plate with some paper towel and get it nice and wet and put some seeds between it, stick it in a plastic bag for a few days in a moderately warm spot. And if there's a germination issue, they're not going to grow under those conditions either. Those are kind of ideal conditions for them. So that will allow you to test the seed and see if it's going to germinate for you or not. And that's basically what most of the seed companies do that have their own seed germination testing program. They just set it up in ideal conditions. And like if you look at the seed packets, it'll say 80% germination rate, 98% germination rate. That's exactly what they are doing then. So, you know, sometimes some old seed gets out into the industry.
Generally speaking, things are tested pretty vigorously, though.
Yeah, they are tested pretty vigorously. It's just if they've sat around for a while in less than ideal conditions.
Yep. Now, did the weather this spring have anything to do with this too, perhaps?
Certainly. When it's wet and cool, things do not germinate as well. Even peas, which are known for doing well in cooler soils, can still have issues. So the fact that he tried three times makes me wonder if there's something actually going on with the seed. So do your own germination test right at home.
Yeah, I agree. I've actually purchased, my wife and I have gotten seeds that were like high quality seeds, and they've worked really well, but then one thing didn't work and I did a test and it wasn't germinating. And these were actually not your normal seed. These were actually a higher quality. Mm. You know, they were expensive. They were heritage. They were really nice packaging. They came from a really reputable company. But, you know, were they tested? Sure they were, but they sat around for a while.
Trust but verify.
There you go. Yeah, because if it sits around, your germination rate's going way down. Yeah. So you may as well eliminate that in terms of diagnostic. If they sprouted, then we can go to the next level and say, hey, what's eating them? What's, what's going on?
Yeah, you know, is there a disease? Is there an insect that's chewing them? But if they're not even sprouting, and that you can just test in your own kitchen.
And that takes out the equation of anything else.
That has nothing to do with inoculant, like with peas, right? That wouldn't happen. have
no,
them.
No. No.
Right.
No. And, you know, a lot of times it's the seed storage conditions. You want it dry and cool. So generally you think about use the sum of 100 and it's like no more than 50% humidity and no more than 50 degrees. I actually put a lot of my seed in the freezer to store it.
Interesting.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
Do you have an extra freezer for that? Do you have room in your freezer for a lot of seeds?
Well, you know, seeds don't take up a lot of room.
At the scale that you're planting things, though?
All my seeds, it's kind of disheartening to get a 5x7-inch box that's $600.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Yeah. Okay. Thank you for your call, Mike. Good luck with your peas and beans.
Just one quick follow-up.
Sure, go ahead.
So at this point, you don't think there's anything specific to them I should be testing in my soil? You just do the germination stuff first?
I would do the germination stuff first. And then if they're germinating in ideal conditions, then you should start looking at other issues, other possibilities.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You got it. Have a great day. 800-348-2551. It's Gardening on Vox Pop, and we'll be back after this. Welcome back to Gardening on Vox Pop. I'm Sarah LaDuke here with Bob Graves from Fatigan's Nursery in Latham, New York, Fred Breglia from the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York, and Dale Isla Riggs of the Berry Patch in Steventown, New York. We'll take a question from our inbox here. Pardon me, I was eating tomatoes in the break. They're delicious. Thank you for bringing them in, Dale.
You're welcome.
Kyle writes in and says, I have a nice size watermelon growing in my garden. It's currently about the size of a football. Is there anything I should or should not do to help it grow to its maximum size? I live in Colorado, not New York, if that matters.
If it's football size right now, I say keep doing what you're doing. The main thing is figuring out when it's ripe. And that can be a little bit tricky. But what we look for is where the watermelon is attached, opposite the stem where it's attached to the vine, there is a tendril that will be growing. And when that tendril starts to turn brown and the bottom of the watermelon starts to get a nice yellow ground color to it, that's the time to pick it.
Okay.
So the bottom that's on the ground.
Yep. Right. It's what's called the ground spot.
Right. The ground spot. Exactly. Yep.
Sometimes they won't have a ground spot. That's how some varieties are, but that tendril, and then if you've grown watermelon very much, there is the old thumping test, and they do get a certain resonance. And for me, I don't like really doing the thump test very much because we grow a lot of the smaller size, personal size watermelons, and thumping them doesn't work as much for that.
Right.
But in a larger one, if you hold that watermelon with one hand on the bottom and you thump it on the top, just tap it on the top. When it's ripe, you will feel it down through the watermelon onto that second hand that's underneath. And it has a certain sound and resonance. But you have to like do it to multiples.
Get your pitch pipes out.
Does that work for testing watermelon at the farmer's market or
yes.
store too? The market,
yes,
market,
absolutely.
Grocery store, yeah.
They'll look at you a little strange.
Well,
but
you just say you're thumping your melons to find out which ones are ripe. It makes perfect sense. Mona writes in and says, black raspberry, how far should I cut them back and when?
Black raspberries, so those are probably finishing up. Most of the varieties are finishing up now. And for promoting good cane growth for your crop for next year and reducing disease, it's good to cut out the canes that just finished fruiting now. And then if they're really long, you could tip back the new canes that are growing. That'll have next year's crop. That will encourage them to do more branching, so you'll get more fruit next year.
Those canes really deteriorate, don't they, and the black ones?
The black raspberries tend to get a number of different viruses a whole lot faster.
Yeah, the canes are just a mess right now.
Yeah, yeah. But once they've borne fruit, get the old ones out of there. Yeah. Just leave the new ones.
Let's go back to the phones, and we will call upon Nancy and Dalton. Hello, Nancy.
Hello.
Hi, how's it going?
Good.
What's your question for the gardeners?
My question is, I have peonies, and they have developed black spots on the leaves for the first time this year.
You never had them before? Is this the first
year? No, I never have.
Yeah, it's weather related. Yep. Peonies will get fungal problems, powdery mildew, black spot. You can use fungicides. The problem with fungicides is they have to be put on before you see the problem. They're preventatives, not eradicants. So you have to anticipate. And, you know, there are a number of organic forms, sulfur being one of the most common of the old forms. But if you don't put it on, once you got it, yeah, you're not going to get rid of it. But they're done at this point anyway. The flowers, the leaves, the flowers are gone. The leaves are going to start to deteriorate. You can just let them deteriorate as they are and then trim them back a little later if you want.
Yep. The good news is they should bounce back.
Yeah, but they'll come. They've got so much root system.
Yep.
That they'll come back.
Yep. And there's still a lot of green, probably life on those leaves, even though they've got some spots. So you want to let them die back yellow before you cut them because that energy is going back down.
That's a good
that
point. You know, even if a leaf is half brown,
right,
half of it's still producing energy.
It is.
So don't take it away just because it looks lousy.
Yeah, better to let it yellow and get that energy down into that corm, and you're going to have a much better plant. But it's not a catastrophic thing.
No.
In that sense, it's just going to – it'll probably look fine next year. It really is, like Bob said, the environmental conditions. And this year is, you know, it's kind of taking its shape with all the humidity.
It's not just rain. It's the amount of moisture in the air.
In the air.
At any time.
Yeah, we were doing good for a while, but I'm starting to see a lot more spots popping up on a lot of stuff now. Like it's starting to.
And it's kind of typical.
And it is kind of typical.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, I'll try that.
And then when you get rid of that foliage, don't compost it like you might normally do. When you do cut it, I would suggest throwing it in a plastic bag or, you know, a garbage bag and getting it off-site. Just it's always good to just get that stuff. That's not good compost-y material. You start to introduce those spores.
That's good to know.
Yep. So throw it away in this case.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Nancy.
It. Bye-bye.
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 800-348-2551. Let's go now to Patricia in Middlefield. Hello, Patricia.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. My husband last October planted a dawn redwood in the middle of our meadow.
Okay.
And it wintered over beautifully. It was so beautifully green. We had poppies and bachelor buttons planted all around it as a memorial for a friend, and all of a sudden it went brown.
Yep.
So
and now it looks terrible.
It got dry, and they cannot get dry. But it will come back, right, Fred?
It should come back. I mean, are you looking at a total brown, or are we looking at green kind of like centers of? If you look at these needles,
no, it's pretty total brown.
It's pretty total brown.
I've seen them completely defoliate. Absolutely look dead, and then the next year come back and look great.
Yep. You know, one thing to check would be if you're really brown, you could start to scrape the stems a little bit.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
My gut feeling would be if you scrape them, you're going to see that the stems are green. And if they're green, green is good. So in that case, it's break up the drought times. If you're not getting water, break it up. They do like water. They don't have a lot of insects or disease problems. They're the second oldest tree species known in the world. They were thought to be extinct until the 40s. And the reason why they're still around is because they have such a long lineage. They're a tough plant. They do well.
If you can get a hose on it, it really needs to be soaked. And you may even see some new growth come back now.
You might.
If you can get it wet.
Yep.
Keep it wet.
Yeah, because he has a 55-gallon drum on a tractor, and he waters it very frequently.
Yeah, it wasn't enough.
he put a moat around it as well.
You know, sometimes what you have to do is let it seep out of that barrel slowly. You know, if you go out there and it comes out in 2 or 3 minutes, it's not going deep enough. He needs to leave it dripping on that for hours.
That's a good point. A lot of times you water it and most of the water is gone. It's not getting down in. If you're not sure if it's getting in, you know, dig a little pilot hole and just kind of see where it's at. And I would say in general, you know, another thing just outside the box here, sometimes plants are installed too deep. So if you did install to the point where you don't see any root flare, it's really deep, that could also create some issues. I've never seen a plant die from being planted too shallow, but I've seen a lot of trees and shrubs die from being planted too deep. I'm not saying that's the case. It's most likely water, But but you might look to see if it is indeed planted way too deep.
And, my rule of thumb is if you're watering something, if you're standing there, you're not watering it enough. You gotta have it come out slowly and walk away.
Yep.
Yeah. And
great.
You can actually set up a little mini drip irrigation system right out of a 55-gallon drum. They're pretty inexpensive to do, and that'll allow it to come out at the rate that you want, so it'll truly soak in.
Yeah, we've
even taken old milk bottles and put holes in the bottom, filled them with water, and put a bunch of those around, and it weeps out slowly.
That's what I was going to say. I used a 5-gallon pail before where we drill tiny little holes in the bottom of a 5-gallon pail, fill the pail right up, walk away. But you have to know how fast it's coming out, so there is a little bit of a test involved. They do sell things called tree gaiters or tree watering wells.
That's the same thing.
And they're kind of like they're hydration bags with little tiny holes. Fill them. What it does is it enables you to fill fast and go, and then over the course of hours it slowly releases it. But you can definitely, we've used 5-gallon pails with little tiny drill bits, and it's worked well. But you have to kind of do a little experiment.
Great.
How fast is too fast? It's hard to go too slow,
right? There's 5 bluebirds sitting in it.
Awesome. That's great. It's a good sign. Good sign.
Good sign. Hopefully they're watering.
All righty. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you,
good
Patricia.
800-348-2551.
We'll go now to Mary in Brunswick. Hello, Mary.
Hi. Good afternoon. On the edge of my property, I have a couple of cottonwood. I believe they are poplars.
They're a type of poplar.
Is that correct?
They are a type of poplar.
Yeah. I have a male and a female, lucky me, and every spring it looks like the middle of January in my yard.
Yes.
You know?
Absolutely.
And
we have them around our house, too.
Down. Oh, yeah. It's amazing. They get mowed, no problem. And then in the flower boxes on my deck, I'm always picking them out. This year, I don't know. I really don't know what possessed me, but I took 2 of them and I put them in pots. And now I have 2 tiny, skinny, 4-inch tall, I believe, poplars.
Okay.
Now what do I do? Can I put them in the yard?
You can.
When? How?
You could plant them right now if you wanted to. Just give them water. Make sure you don't let them dry out. But otherwise, they're just small, so they're going
to
be
don't
easy.
Don't plant them close to any building because they get big and fall down.
Yep, they do get. That's a tree that'll easily get, it could easily get over 100 feet tall. New York State's biggest tree overall, regardless of species, is a cottonwood. Its diameter is over 11 feet. 11 feet diameter, 34 feet circumference, and over 100 feet tall. So that's just shows you the genetic potential of a cottonwood. And they're a great tree. They're a native. They have a lot of people say they don't like them, but they're a great in the wild, they're a great tree because they're great floodplain erosion control plants.
They're just messy and dangerous.
Just in a small yard.
Just that.
Yeah, not the best for small yards or close to houses.
Okay.
So give them room.
Okay, I got it.
Yep. Otherwise, plant them and just keep them watered.
Great.
So that's the only secret. Just keep them watered and don't mow them down by accident.
That's it. Maybe put a little stake around them. And if you're trying to protect them through the winter, I always, a little tiny tree wrap or something to protect them through the winter because they're that small. They're vulnerable to voles, rabbits. A lot of things could mow them right down. So protect them for a few years. Then they're going to be big enough. They won't need much help.
Then
okay,
you'll
good.
Need protection
Thank you.
For
I
them.
Will do.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Mary.
Take care.
Let's see if we can fit in one more call. We'll go to Deborah in Amherst. Hello, Deborah.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a question. I have some daisies that originally were in my grandmother's garden, and I have some cousins who would like some of the seeds. And right now they've just dropped all their petals, and they just have the yellow centers. And I wonder how long to let them, stay standing before I harvest them. Or how do you go about saving the seeds?
You want to take that one?
Well, I would say with the daisies, the yellow part is going to be what turns into the seeds. And when that starts to turn brown, mm-hmm. they're probably mature at that point. And at that point, you could just collect them, keep them in an envelope. How much time that's going to take, I have never paid attention to.
I have never paid attention because we usually deadhead them before they get to that stage. But, you know, generally the seed life cycle is just what Dalala said. It's going to turn brown. It's going to dry.
If they start to kind of flake apart.
And that's what's going to happen.
That's what's going to happen.
That's what I would say. Once they start to flake, that's because naturally they're going
to
shed.
You're going to have to stratify them over the winter, though, right, with something like that in order to get them to germinate.
I'm not sure if a daisy needs cold stratification. So many of these seeds are a little different.
I would look that up.
I would look that one up as well.
If you know what type of daisy it is.
The other thing you can do is, since we're not sure exactly how long, you know, collect some 1 week and one on the next week. And I would collect them for like 3 or 4 weeks solid. Mm-hmm. And that way you'll have a better chance of making sure that they're fully mature.
Yep. And then look up the requirements for germination of the daisy, because like Bob said, they might require a cold stratification. And if they do, it's usually a certain amount of time. Mm-hmm. So just to break that dormancy, it needs to get that cycle. But not everything does. So, I would look it up and before you proceed, just so you don't get it disappointed and you have good success.
And you can stratify it just by putting it in your refrigerator. Yep. So it's not hard to do.
Right. Yeah, we don't need to wait for winter or anything like that, or bury it in the snow. Refrigerator works really well. We've done that with a lot of stuff at the Landis Arboretum. So,
is there any way they could be planted this year to come up next spring, do you think, the seeds?
They would definitely be able to be planted next spring, I would say, if they went through their cold period and you kept them. So that would be a yes.
Depends on whether they need that stratification.
It's just whether or not they need that stratification. If they don't, then you might even be able to get away with a fall sow. Like, for example, Columbine, for example, does not require a lot of cold stratification. So you could actually harvest seed from Columbine now, plant it this fall, get little tiny plants, and then have those little plants, bigger plants for the spring. So with that plant, I know it because we've worked with it. Again, just look at the requirements. Okay. But if it doesn't require the cold, that means you could plant it this fall and you'd have little tiny plants that you can give away. If not, you're waiting till the spring.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
All right. Good luck with your daisies, Deborah. Bye-bye.
Thank you for calling.
You. Sure. That has been our show. That's it for today. Can you believe it? It goes so fast.
It always goes so fast.
It always amazes me how quick this hour goes.
Just the quickest hour of any week.
Say you had, you know, they say time flies when you're having fun. So we always have fun here.
We always have fun.
Thank you to Fred Breglia, Bob Graves, and Dalila Riggs for being here. Thank you all. Thanks to everyone who called in and emailed. I'm sorry if we didn't get to your question. The Gardeners will be back 2 weeks from today. Support for Vox Pop comes from the Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, protecting the forests, wetlands, shorelines, and ridges that protect Lake George permanently. Projects, events, and news at lglc.org. The Hyde Collection in Glens Falls is the exhibition on view through September 15th, Surrealism 1924 to Now, open Thursday through Monday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., hydecollection.org. And Curtis Lumber, specializing in kitchen design with cabinets from Wellborn and Merrillot and quartz countertops from Cambria. American-made products sold locally, curtislumber.com. Thanks again for joining us today on Vox Pop. Our engineer has, as ever, been Zach Malloy. Susie Check, I took your calls, and I'm Sarah LaDuke in for Ray Graff. Tomorrow on Food Friday, we will talk about seasoning with Tony Carlotto and Darby Weagle. That's tomorrow at 2. Spicy then. Stay tuned for now for the Capital Connection.